Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello, welcome. That's right, it's Speak Up with me, Jesse, here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Alkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples. Today on the program, well, it's our first Tuesday Speak Up of the new year. And we're going to spend a little time looking back at a couple great interviews from later in last year that still have lots of relevance and important information to share with you. So we've got that and a little bit of music as usual, and maybe some thoughts. We'll see. I am going to start us off with a track by local band Girls Nails, who are from Surrey and have performed a Studio 6 live session here at CJSF. You can go to CJSF's YouTube page or cjsf.ca to find that video of them performing. I recommend it. And they put out an album this past year, well, in 2024, so last year at this point, early last year, actually, in February, that I did not discover until December or so. It's called California Kickball, and this is a track from it called Chicken and Rice.
Fell asleep on my back, bending the spine just to see where it snaps. Safe from the noise.
volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Reporting from Burnaby, British Columbia, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Nalox Home is a nonprofit society that provides destigmatizing public education services that inform youth throughout British Columbia on how to identify the signs of an overdose and how to effectively use naloxone in the event of an overdose. Naloxone is a medication used to reverse or reduce the effects of opioids, and its usage has only increased in importance as the opioid crisis in BC has continued. This is something that was recognized by Chloe Goodison, a health sciences student at Simon Fraser University who began the organization during her first year of university in 2021. CJSF recently sat down with Goodison to discuss what inspired her to start Naloxone, the work that they continue to do, as well as the ways in which she hopes that the organization is able to grow beyond BC. Please take a listen. I'm joined here in studio with Chloe Goodison, the founder of Naloxone, and I think the first thing I want to ask you is if you can explain to people what Naloxone is and how you came about starting it.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me. Naloxone Society is a registered Canadian charity that I started almost 4 years ago when I was in my first year at Simon Fraser University, actually. It is a education service, and we go into high schools. Teachers can book us anywhere across Canada, but we really target British Columbia. And we can go in and we provide drug education and naloxone training workshops in response to British Columbia's ongoing and deadly growing overdose epidemic. We're a team of all youth, so I have a team of 85, 18 to 25-year-olds on my team, and we go in and provide peer-to-peer, youth-to-youth drug education and naloxone training.
You said you started this in your first year.
Yeah.
How does a first-year university student even think to start a nonprofit society?
Very good question, and it kind of happened by fluke, if I'm being honest. So when I was in high school, I first of all, the overdose crisis was declared in 2016, which mm-hmm. is the year that I started grade 9. And it was grade 10 going into grade 11 that I was on public transportation, knew nothing about the overdose crisis, had maybe heard the word, and I witnessed an overdose, which is not rare. It's not a news flash story that I saw. We've probably all walked past somebody experiencing a drug poisoning. And this is what really got me involved in the realm of drug poisonings and harm reduction. And I really was surprised that I was witnessing this in my own community of Port Moody, British Columbia. In my head, I thought all drug use and overdoses were isolated to the downtown east side. And this was just a preconceived stigma that I had based on basically no exposure to drug education. Then I entered my first year of university in 2020, so it was online, and I did have a little bit more free time because there wasn't volunteer opportunities in clubs and sports happening. So basically, I was scrolling on Facebook one night, and I saw an ad from SFU's Office of Community Engagement that they run an annual community engagement competition. It's called the Student Community Engagement Competition. And this is an opportunity where you can enter a idea of something, a way to fix a problem in your community. You have to identify community partners you've connected with, and you can compete to win $3,000 to implement this community project. So I thought, okay, well, I've been volunteering in harm reduction for a while. I saw this drug overdose on SkyTrain a few years ago, and nobody knew what to do despite it being a declared overdose crisis. How can I find a way to provide accessible and equitable drug education with naloxone training that youth will actually listen to. So I got 12 of my friends, all also in first year, and we met up on Zoom, and we just had this idea, and we just brainstormed a curriculum and what items are important to talk about to youth, what should youth be knowing about our drug overdose crisis. And I won that competition, and since then we registered as a society. We've got a lot more funding than $3,000, and like I said before, we've grown our team to over 80 people.
How do you develop the presentations?
That's a great question. So really, in that original brainstorming session I had with the team I put together at the very beginning, we went through the topics that we thought had to be included. Like, how do we give youth a very well-rounded understanding of this problem? And it starts with talking about stigma and talking about, you know, what are the current ideas we have around people who use drugs, and what... is that true? And we walked through some language swap outs that we can use. Instead of saying addicts or junkies, we say people who use drugs or people who are in a relationship with a substance. So it's really starting at ground zero there, and then working into talking about harm reduction and what is harm reduction in a non-drug related sense. You know, do you ride your bike? Do you wear a helmet? Do you put sunscreen on in the summer? All examples of harm reduction. It just makes sense. In the same way that naloxone or drug checking services just make sense. They keep people alive. From there, we really wanted to get into some statistics around how hard-hitting the overdose crisis is in all parts of our province, not just the downtown east side, not just Surrey Central, every pocket of the province. And then the bread and butter of the presentation is the naloxone training. So we took this presentation to a partner we had at the Tri-Cities Community Overdose Action Team, where it's a team of different community members and problem solvers, like a Fraser Health official, a SHARE Family and Community Services representative. And they looked over our presentation and trained us on how to deliver it in a sensitive and culturally safe way. And from there, we trained each other and just launched in and made sure everything in our presentation was 100% science-backed and accurate.
Yeah, would you say part of that stigma, too, is taking away some of that fear of even being around naloxone itself?
Oh, 100%. You know, something we've had a lot of parents and students say before they've actually seen our presentation is that carrying naloxone is enabling substance use, which is so, so incorrect. And we definitely found that students have been scared to, we've actually found that 75% of students didn't know about naloxone and didn't know how to use it, didn't know you could get it for free. So we're really myth-busting that and just providing that education that students can go get a life-saving naloxone kit. But there is that the portion of students, too, who are scared, and they're scared of needles, which is fair. And we've educated them that there's multiple kinds of naloxone available, not just needle naloxone. But I'd really say that there's still that public misconception that harm reduction enables substance use and that drug education in schools enables substance use, but it does not. It's not correlated with increased substance use initiation.
There was pretty recent data from the province saying that there's apparently been a significant decline in drug deaths within BC, about 9% since last year. Would you say that's kind of like a statistical anomaly, or is there any sort of, I guess, information you have, you know, with the work that you do that may provide some insight on that?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a mixed reaction for me, because, of course, part of me is like, oh, my gosh, something is maybe working, like something is contributing to a decrease in deaths. But it's still way too many deaths. These are our family members, our community members, our loved ones who are dying at higher rates than anything else. You know, this is still our leading cause of death for people aged 10 to 59 in British Columbia. So as much as we can maybe hold on to a sliver of hope that something's working to decrease, whether it's, you know, increased access to harm reduction services or less people using alone, hopefully those elements that maybe are happening are continuing. But we also have to remember this is every single drug poisoning death is preventable, and there are still far too many happening.
Yeah, it's such a multifaceted issue, but I guess with naloxone specifically, I think it seems like the part that you're trying to address is like the stigma around it and making sure that drug education matches the seriousness and the prevalence of the issue.
100%. You know, I never questioned receiving sexual education in school. It's just what you do. You learn, you teach young people how to make informed and empowered decisions about their own health and safety, same way you would about substance use. And by continuing to put our heads in the sand and pretending that talking about drug education in schools is just going to make youth want to use drugs, that's not the truth. And we have to provide young people with the tools to not just prevent and recognize, but also respond to an overdose. Because personally, if I had received this workshop in school, I probably would have thought right off the bat, I don't use drugs that I'm at risk of illicit drug toxicity with. So I'm not, this isn't going to connect to me. But why we, how we've tried to navigate that narrative is by saying we can all witness it. This is our leading cause of death. Over 35,000 people call 911 each year for suspected overdose. We're all at risk of witnessing an overdose. So knowing how to not just prevent and recognize, but respond, carrying naloxone, saving a life, it's important.
And yeah, like you said, I guess comparing it also to just other basic safety protocols that we just have in our daily lives that are so normalized and feel like second nature, getting to that point.
Totally.
Last question I want to ask you is, if you have current plans or aspirations for how you want naloxone to grow, past even BC perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, what I've learned is that there's a need right across Canada, North America really, for youth-to-youth delivered substance use education. And yes, there are other vehicles of substance use education. You have your programs that preach just say no. You have your programs that are led by police officers coming in and using scare tactics. Our overdose numbers have really just gone up. Of course, yes, there was a bit of a decrease, but that's not because of the DARE program. So yes, we need to find a way to scale this model of having young people just chatting with their peers about how, hey, drug use is happening. These are the tools available to keep you alive. So, I mean, next steps are really just expanding our in-person operations province-wide. Right now we're pretty far across Metro Vancouver. We'll do anything Vancouver to Mission in person. But, you know, getting an island branch, getting a northern health branch, a interior branch going, just so we can really get into those rural and remote communities that are so disproportionately affected by our drug poisoning crisis. And after that, it's hopping into other provinces. Every single day I have emails from Alberta, Manitoba, Ontario, these awesome community advocates who see the work we're doing and recognize that there's nothing else like it, and they want to develop naloxone society branches of their own out in their regions. So that's really the next step, just scaling and capacity building and fundraising for that. But I'm continuously impressed and motivated by the community support. We've had an overwhelming number of people cheer us on, and a very, very slim number of people who do not agree with the work we're doing. So I'm definitely motivated, to say the least.
I know I said last question, but I guess last thing is, you know, you're still in school. You're a student at Simon Fraser University. Yeah. Post-graduation, is the plan to really focus on naloxone and the ways that it can expand?
Yeah, 100%. So I'm just finishing up my Bachelor of Science in Health Sciences right now, and I'm so grateful to be part of a faculty that's so understanding of the work I'm doing, and they're so supportive. And, you know, my professors are always asking me questions and engaging with me and understanding that I do work, this is my full-time job. So balancing the full-time student course load with the full-time entrepreneurial lifestyle, I suppose, is challenging, but I find ways to take breaks. However, it will be very nice once I have achieved that Bachelor of Science and I have it, and then I can, you know, really be full-time and continue scaling this out and driving this change, and eventually, you know, stepping out of the role. And I probably want to do more school, so finding who's next to lead this youth-run organization and what other change can happen under other leadership. But that's way in the future. I'm here for now.
Once again, that was our interview with Chloe Goodison, Executive Director and Founder of Naloxone. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This interview would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
How important is this station to you? Local radio, by and for your community, news and information that matters to you. You won't find anything like it anywhere else. Now we need you. We need your voice to support the Community Radio Initiative. You see, radio has been there for you in those important moments, and now we need your voice. You can join the fight for the future of community radio at mycri.ca, because local voices are what shapes our community.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio station up here at Simon Fraser University, up above the clouds this morning. I'm Jesse. Thanks to Danny for that interview you just heard about naloxone. And in the second half of the show, we are going to hear my conversation with John Stark and Brad Davies with a small appearance, cameo by Ray Renouf, about the New West Crises Response pilot project, which started last year and is ongoing in the city of New Westminster as a way to address the intersecting and ongoing crises of drug addiction, homelessness, and mental health. We'll set the stage. You'll learn much more as you listen to this conversation, which we'll go to right now.
John Stark, a manager of social planning. I've been with the city for 18 years. I've been extensively involved with addressing homelessness, even though the work I deal with deals with a broad range of social issues. And over the past year and a half, being involved with the Crisis Response Pilot Project, I'm really just doing a lot of research with regards to placing it in a position where it can launch.
My name's Brad Davey. I'm the Deputy Fire Chief with New Westminster Fire and Rescue Services, but I've also been working with the pilot project for the last year and a half. I bring to this project my background of being a pharmacist with Fraser Health Authority and have some 30 years with that.
Great. Thanks again to both of you for being here. Can you give us a high-level overview of what is the Crisis Response Pilot Project?
The Crisis Response Pilot Project addresses the three crises of homelessness, mental health, and substance use. And we know with regards to the pandemic that all municipalities, with regards to these crises, there's been an increase. Between 2020 and 2023, based on our point-in-time homeless count, there was a 65% increase in homelessness in New Westminster. And our neighboring municipalities had similar or higher increases in homelessness. Combined with that, we have the opioid epidemic. And we also know with the pandemic that isolation became an issue. A number of faith-based and nonprofits closed their doors, just like civic facilities. And this really, for people who were dealing with mental health issues, there was definitely individuals who self-medicated to deal with this isolation and loneliness. So we saw these three crises definitely take hold. And as a municipality, we realized that the status quo couldn't continue, that if we really wanted to make progress, we couldn't just look at one crisis because we'd have limited effectiveness. We'd have to look at three because they're interrelated. We also recognized that these are senior government responsibilities, but we needed to do something in the interim as we work with the senior levels of government with regards to funding and resources.